Over the last two decades, the way we've treated HIV and AIDS has been transformed thanks in part to better understanding of the virus and to medications. Today, we continue our five-part series, AIDS Then and Now, with a look at what day-to-day life is like for those infected with the virus and the scientific breakthroughs that have been made that are making it all possible. We're joined by renowned HIV researcher and one of the men behind the HIV drug cocktail, Dr. David Ho, scientific director and CEO of the Aaron Diamond AIDS Research Center. Also with us are Jim Lister, a client at Gay Men's Health Crisis, an HIV prevention care and advocacy organization, and by Tyrell, a client of the All Forney Center. Is it the Ollie Forney Center, which serves LGBT homeless youth in New York City? Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Dr. Ho, you've been at the forefront of HIV research for decades. The multi-drug cocktail that you helped pioneer has altered the course of the epidemic and what the future looks like for most patients with HIV and AIDS. Thinking about how things were at the beginning of the epidemic, how do you feel about where we find ourselves right now in 2010? Are you surprised, hopeful, disappointed?
Well, I was there at the beginning of the epidemic as a young physician and saw some of the early cases out in Los Angeles. I could not have imagined that this would turn into the pandemic that it is today. And for over a decade, since 1981, I witnessed many of my patients succumb to this disease. So certainly it was very gratifying to have contributed to the understanding of HIV and to help concoct the combination therapy beginning in 1995 that began to help control HIV replication. And I would say that it's quite remarkable that patients are living with this virus controlled by the drugs, but we still have a long ways to go.
Well, when we did the first series in 1987, there were predictions that something would come up with, would become developed within a decade or so. More recently, we spoke to Drs. Gallo and Levy, two of the leading researchers, and they weren't willing to make any predictions.
Right. They're probably reluctant to say anything about vaccine development.
Yeah.
But in terms of therapy, it is pretty clear that we continue to make advances. Obviously, between 1987 and 1995, remarkable changes occur for the better. But vaccine development, unfortunately, has not been successful to date, and much more work is required.
Partly because the vaccine keeps on changing.
The virus keeps changing.
Mm-hmm. Jim, when did you test positive for the virus?
I share a date with President Kennedy, November 22nd, 1989.
Do you know how or when you were infected?
I think it was while I was in college in the 70s. I was very sick. I'm 6'2". I weigh 185. I got down to 118 pounds. The doctor could never figure out what it was. I was so sick I couldn't go home for the summer. It happened over the summer, and I spent 3 months in bed. I read Gone with the Wind.
But that's a long gap between being infected and finally even knowing that you were infected.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of people who are non-progressors, so I could have been a non-progressor for that many years. And I've always been very conscious of eating correctly, trying to exercise. You know, I didn't drink alcohol probably till I was like 26 years old. I mean, I kept good care of myself.
How was the virus and AIDS perceived at the time?
In 89?
Yeah, by the time you finally found out that you had it.
In 89, I asked my doctor to test me because my friends had started dying in 84. I lost my first boyfriend in 84. And by 89, my friends were dropping like flies, and the only constant I could see was me, so I thought it has to be me. And it was scary. I was scared to death.
Dr. Ho, at that time, 1989, certain drugs for HIV were on the market, but even then, weren't we unsure about how effective they were or how long they would work?
Sure. By 1989, I think we had a couple of drugs approved.
AZT, especially.
AZT, certainly the first one, and they were used one at a time. which in retrospect we know is doomed to fail. And the drugs were not used all that correctly anyway. So the impact on survival was in the order of a few months if you took one or the other drug.
Is AZT still being used?
AZT is still a commonly used agent in combination with other drugs, yes.
Jim, when did you start taking HIV drugs?
In 96, though after I tested...
96, so from 89 to 96 you didn't take any medication?
Well, except for after I tested positive, my doctor wanted to see how I would do on AZT because it was the only drug. And I couldn't get beyond one twice a day. I was in a fetal position. I was so sick. So I was very lucky that I didn't have to take it until 96 because I couldn't take AZT.
How many medications do you take per day now?
Around 20. They're not all HIV related, but they have to do with side effects and that kind of stuff. And I take a vitamin, you know, that which I count, but and maybe I shouldn't count. But
and how often per day?
I'm on a twice a day regime.
Terrell, when did you learn that you were positive? How old were you?
I tested positive on May 28, 2008, when I was 21.
And how did you become infected? Do you know?
Because I became co-infected by one of my ex-partners. At the time, we were living together down in New Jersey, and I don't believe that he knew that he was positive, and we wound up co-infected. Well, I wound up co-infected.
Are you currently on any kind of HIV drugs?
No, I just got my recent labs done about last month or so, and my current T-cell count is about 1,100 or so, and my viral load is just a little over 7,000, so my doctor recommended not to start a medication regimen too early.
Mm-hmm. Because this is kind of early? This is before you really have to start fighting seriously?
Right, because my immune system is fighting off the virus by itself naturally and doing a pretty decent job of holding it back. And it might have an adverse effect if I started medication too early.
What are you doing in the meantime to take care of yourself?
In the meantime, I've taken steps to live a healthier lifestyle. I try to keep my stress levels low, and I've changed some of my eating and exercise habits and just basically try to stay as low stress as possible and try to keep, you know, my immune system up.
We're talking with Tyrell and with Jim Lister, who are two people who are HIV positive, also with Dr. David Ho, science director and CEO of the Aaron Diamond AIDS Research Center, one of the developers of the cocktail that has proven so effective in fighting HIV infection. In the early days of the drug cocktail, many researchers advocated a treat early and treat aggressively approach. So is that changing now?
In fact, I wrote editorial commentary advocating for that position because we study what the virus was doing inside the body of an infected person. And despite what Terrell just said, even if you have a small amount of virus measurable, so-called viral low, it actually represents tremendous amount of virus replication. And that process is eating away at one's CD4 T cells, which are cells critical to immune function. And through that process...
So by not attacking it immediately, you're actually making it easier for the virus to grow.
Well, the virus is growing. It's destroying these important T cells constantly. Even if you measure the so-called CD4 T cell count, even if it's high, it just means that you still have enough of a reserve, but it's being depleted. And these cells are central to your defenses. And so I championed that position. And because of some of the side effects that were described, people would have to strike a balance between our understanding of the virus and what is ideal versus what is practical in terms of the side effects. But the equation has dramatically shifted since 1995-96 because the drugs are now much better than we had back then and are generally associated with fewer side effects, so that gradually the field is shifting back to the earlier treatment position.
So better drugs are being developed all the time, or are we fine-tuning our knowledge of the drugs that we've been using?
We are fine-tuning some of the old classes of drugs that attack the reverse transcriptase or the protease enzymes of HIV. But since 1996, we have added two new classes of drugs, one that attacks a third enzyme called integrase, and another class that blocks the entry of the virus into cells. So refinement as well as new breakthroughs.
So what we're doing here is we're not coming up with a cure, but we're finding more ways to keep the virus in check?
Absolutely. We're finding ways of... We now have over 25 drugs that we could use to create combinations for our patients. And these drugs are generally easier to use than drugs from a decade ago. And if you're starting new today with them, they're generally associated with fewer side effects.
Doesn't the HIV virus mutate rapidly? How much drug resistance do we find in most strains of HIV? And does it mean that we have to keep on changing the mix in the cocktail?
Yes. What you say is correct. HIV, when its replication is not controlled, replicates at a high rate and makes high mutation rates. Therefore, it's constantly changing. And this is why we need to treat it with multiple drugs simultaneously so that the virus cannot evade all of them at one time.
The treatment is called HART, Highly Active Antiretroviral Therapy.
Right, and that's what you refer to as the cocktail.
And there are differences between, as you're suggesting here, the nucleoside analogs and the protease inhibitors attacking different parts of the problem.
Correct.
Jim, do you experience any side effects from the antiretroviral drugs that you're taking?
Yes. One of the drugs I took, Sustiva, was, and I was warned about it, causes, sorry.
Take a little water.
Sorry about that. Causes sleep problems. Sorry. Which I did experience. So I went on the Ambien routine, where that helped you sleep or at least fall asleep. I did it for 5 years and then I gave up. There are other drugs that we didn't know, but they cause lipoatrophy, which I'm experiencing in my face, my buttocks, my arms, and there are other things that...
But these are not readily apparent to someone like me just looking at you.
Would they be at times? I had an experience walking down the street when some guy came up to me, and he was being playful. It was in the summertime. I had my sunglasses on. He took my sunglasses off, and he said, you know, he was trying to hit me up, and he was being playful. And then he noticed my face, and he said, what is this about? And he pointed to his cheeks, and I said, I have AIDS, and this is a side effect of the medication. He threw my sunglasses on the ground and marched off. I can't remember if he said anything, and if he did, I'm glad I can't. Hmm. But
it's a good way to deal with people who are panhandling.
I guess that's the way to look at it, yeah. But there are other side effects, like I will be speaking, going right along, and I cannot find the word that I'm trying to. And I just stare off into space for a second, and I will – sometimes I get it and sometimes I don't. But there is – I'm 55. I'll be 56 July 4th. And, you know, there is a point I'm reaching now where it's, you know, is it age or is it HIV? Mm-hmm. Is it the medication or is it the virus?
And Dr. Ho, a lot of people have problems remembering words, even before they hit 55.
Myself included, yeah.
But is this often a side effect of the drugs?
Actually, I'm not sure what Jim just described in terms of word-finding problems is necessarily a complication of one specific drug. It could be the underlying HIV infection, which we know could have an effect on the central nervous system. Now, to a trained physician, I see the lipodystrophy that Jim is talking about. quite evidently.
This is the way that fats are distributed in the body? Yes.
One loses fat from certain areas and put it back in other areas.
And some patients on treatment develop facial wasting syndrome.
One sees a little bit of that in Jim.
Mm-hmm. We'll take a little break and we'll come back with more. My guests are Dr. David Ho, Scientific Director and CEO of the Aaron Diamond AIDS Research Center. Also Jim Lister, a client of Gay Men's Health Crisis, and Terrell, a client of the Ali Forney Center. We are talking about living with AIDS day to day as part of our series, our update of a series we did in 1987. We're calling this one AIDS Then and Now. We're back with Dr. David Ho, one of the developers of the HIV cocktail. He was named Time Magazine Person of the Year in 1996. Also with us are Tyrell and Jim Lister, who are two men living day-to-day with HIV. We say HIV, not HIV-AIDS, right? The AIDS will not kick in as long, in the case of Jim, as long as he's taking the cocktail?
Well, AIDS is, by definition, when your immune system is impaired to a level that allows certain infections to occur or to a CD4 cell number less than 200. Mm. So it's a more advanced form of HIV infection.
Tyrell, did those potential side effects concern you? Is that one of the reasons you're reluctant to go on that treatment?
The potential side effects, they were a factor, but that didn't worry me as much as some of the long-term side effects of starting medication too early. I was informed by my doctor that there could be complications later on in a few years if I were to change medications or start a new medication regimen, because sometimes when you're on an antiretroviral medication for a while, the virus actually adapts to it, and that medication becomes ineffective. So therefore, they have to create a whole new cocktail for you.
Well, Jim has brought in a sheet in which he has a list of all of the drugs he takes, all the drugs he has taken. And that's an important way of keeping track of where you are right now. What happens if you miss a day?
I have periods of time where I don't miss anything, and then I will go a couple of days where I just forget, and it's a part of my routine, and I don't know why it happens. The experience that Tyrell is talking about, that the virus mutates, I'm on my third cocktail, and that's the reason, is because it mutated and my numbers were getting low. And as far as the AIDS, I am a person living with AIDS because my T cells did drop below 200 a couple of times, and my viral load shot up. So I fulfilled the definition. So I am actually a person living with AIDS.
I'd like to read an excerpt from an essay by Dr. Abigail Zuger that appeared in the New York Times in 2006 about the problems of HIV treatment. Not everyone who's infected, I'm quoting, not everyone who's infected gets sick, not everyone who's treated gets well. Some people progress along the road from initial infection to progressive immune deficiency to life-threatening illness at the expected pace, and then with treatment head right back again to health. Others stall along the way, sick or well, defying our dire predictions and happy reassurances alike. Dr. Ho, how much of treatment for individual patients is still a kind of a guesswork for medical professionals?
Well, we've learned a lot over the years in terms of untreated HIV infection. There's no question there's a great deal of variability in the so-called progression rate. Some people could progress to full-blown AIDS after infection of just a few years. The average is sort of 8 to 10 years, and others, as Jim alluded to earlier, could be slow progressors or non-progressors and could go 15, 20 years. But after many, many years of observation, it is pretty conclusive that only about 1% or less of the infected population will be a non-progressor. If you follow long enough, just about everyone will progress. Now, the treatment outcome is also quite variable, and there are a lot of human factors, some of which obviously is the ability to stick to the regimen. But in general, now that the drugs have fewer side effects, allowing patients to be more compliant, and the fact that they're easier to take than 10 years ago, the so-called success rate is going up with time. And I would like to emphasize the fact that the first treatment is probably the most important treatment. And we should do it right and do it aggressively so that you don't allow the virus to replicate. If it doesn't replicate, it won't mutate. The problem comes from periodically letting the drug levels slip, and that's when the virus could emerge to replicate a little bit and become resistant.
But Drs. Gallo and Levy talked about the problems of creating a vaccine. Cell memory changes, and they say that one of the problems they foresee is that you'd have to have booster shots along the way, even if an effective vaccine were developed. And that's the same kind of problem as getting people to take their cocktail every
yes.
day.
Well, booster shots, I think, are going to be required even if we get to the initial vaccine.
It won't be like a polio vaccine.
But we're not even at the first step yet.
Tyrell, you're 23. How do you feel most people your age view the possibility of HIV infection? We often hear news reports that young people don't take potential infection seriously enough.
The major problem with my age demographic is that there's so many misconceptions that surround HIV and AIDS. It's like, who do we listen to? Where do we go to get actual facts? And then basing that knowledge from knowledge that people have from 20 years or so ago, because a lot of the people who are around when AIDS and HIV first made its appearance as an epidemic back in the early 80s, their children are now grown. And a lot of them were born with the virus, so a lot of them have grown up with that medical background where, okay, we started on medication and we had to follow what our doctors say, so on and so forth. But the major problem with new infected cases is that a lot of people don't like to disclose because there's still that public stigma out there, like, okay, you must have done something wrong, or you must have brought this upon yourself, or something like that. And it creates a... I'm sorry, I'm like struggling for words here. It creates a difficult social dynamic, especially when we're trying to seek treatment and seek help, because it's like, if somebody that's my age who's younger would go to a clinic or something like that, we face issues of disclosure, and we face issues of privacy, and as well as facing stigma within our own age, within our own social circles, in our own communities. I'm sorry.
No, a reason I assume that you just wanted to be identified by your first name.
Yeah, part of the reason.
Jim, on the other hand, you were willing to give us your last name because everybody who knows you knows that you're HIV positive?
I would say yes, they do, whether I have told them or not.
Do you think that people in your demographic have a different sense because they have seen, for example, they've seen people die in the early years?
Yeah, we experienced the plague. You know, we watched our friends die. One of the things for me is using my last name and being out about my status is a dedication to all my friends who died. Mm-hmm. Because I know that it's because the mistakes that were made on them is the reason that I'm alive, and I will never forget that.
On the other hand, you told my producer that some people want to be infected. Why is that?
There was a period, it was called bug chasing. I could not understand it. I would encounter people who, when I asked them if they were positive or negative, because I will not have any physical sexual contact with someone who is negative, which there are people who argue with that, and they were some of them. But these people wanted to zero convert. They wanted it to be over. They didn't want to have to worry anymore. And I had to like talk them down from the rooftop where they were going to jump and say, this is what you're looking at. Understand. And I would go into the litany of all the stuff that I have to deal with. And, you know, it just doesn't end. You can't change your mind. Once you do this, it's done. There is no turning back. you know, and most of them were young. And I would say, you know, give yourself 5 years or something, but this is not the place to be making that decision.
My guests are Jim Lister, who has AIDS, and Terrell, who is HIV infected. They're here along with Dr. David Ho, the scientific director and CEO of the Aaron Diamond AIDS Research Center, a developer of the drug cocktail that's been so effective in halting the advance of HIV/AIDS. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Terrell, at the time that you tested positive, what kinds of resources were available to you? Weren't you homeless for a time?
Yes, I was homeless for a while, and then I actually went, my clinic referred me to the Ali Fournay Center, and that was actually a big step up in my life, because the Ali Fournay Center, they specialize in the needs of homeless youth ages 16 to 24 that identify as LGBTQ, standing for lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. Going to the Ali Fournay Center and also being positive, it was a big help because I found that they have staff that were trained in issues of disclosure and also issues of therapy and help. Like, I would be able to go there and seek the different services that I need, such as medical services and therapeutic services, without having to worry about disclosing my status or having, or for lack of a better term, being outed to my social community against my will.
Would it be a problem just going looking for a job if people knew?
For the most part, no. And from a legal perspective, I would say that it would be illegal because it would be discrimination. But there's also the human factor that's behind it. It's sort of where you're going to go look for a job, what type of work that you're going to do, because it also falls back on our age demographic. Being honest about it, AIDS isn't sexy. You see what I'm saying? And when you hit the younger age demographic, that's what people want. That's what the American image wants. It's like you have to be young and vital and sexy and healthy, especially for most retail positions. Like, if I was to go to a retailer, like a clothing retailer, for instance, where I'm constantly in, where I'm constantly in contact with people all the time, and somebody was to know my status or I was to be open with my status, it could create a difficult dichotomy there, because it would be, okay, would these people interact with me differently because of my status, or would they just look past that and see me as this retail person?
Some people are still afraid that it can be transmitted rather casually, which of course is not true.
Right.
Jim, many of the shows we did on the subject in 1987 focused on the terrible state of the New York City public health system. What kinds of support structures were available to you when you tested positive?
Well, when I tested positive, I was healthy and working. I had my own business. I was self-sufficient. I felt that, I don't think so much from the public health system as it was the private health system, because I had to pay for my own health insurance. And for years, I hemorrhaged my savings by paying for everything that was HIV related, because I didn't want my health insurance to be canceled, because all my friends' health insurances were being canceled because the insurance companies, it was during that period of time, which I'm not gonna, everybody knows about.
Well, that was the AIDS crisis period.
Yeah, that was the during the plague, and health insurance companies were not making these huge profits, and that's what they saw, and so they were canceling. And so I wanted to save my health insurance for when I was in the hospital, and I really needed it.
Have things changed with the passage of this new health care bill?
I look positively forward. I regret that it's not going to be in full force for so many years, or that it's going to be step by step by step. There are problems with it. It's not perfect. Obama had to compromise, but God bless him.
Dr. Ho, I gather you're also trying to develop a vaccine.
Yes.
I don't know whether your approach is similar to the ones that Gallo and Levy are trying. Time magazine called your HIV vaccine the immunological equivalent of a frozen dinner. does that mean that these antibodies are coming ready-made?
Right. So the difficulty of coming up with a vaccine against HIV is the fact that this virus, structurally speaking, has a shield that surrounds its surface. And that shield consists of sugar and elements that could change very rapidly. And antibodies that are made by our immune system cannot latch on to the virus in any tight way. And hence, we have not been able to use a vaccine to induce what we call neutralizing antibodies, i.e. antibodies that could inactivate the virus. And so we and others have struggled with this issue for over 20 years. Now, in the laboratory, we do have antibodies that could block HIV infection because the virus will utilize certain receptor to enter a cell. And the primary receptor for the virus is a molecule called CD4. And we have an antibody that's made and could be manufactured in large quantities that will block the virus cold. And we are saying, well, could this be a substitute for the traditional vaccine? This is a passive approach rather than an active approach. Active approach would require me to give you something and your immune system making the antibody.
The usual vaccine where you give dead cells or right. weakened cells and then the body learns to fight it.
Right. In this case, the passive approach, we would give you the antibody that's made by new bioengineering techniques.
Would this work for patients who are HIV positive currently or only as a way of preventing people from being infected?
Interestingly, you should ask that. In fact, this antibody was developed as a treatment modality first. And clearly, in infected people, it has gone through phase 1 and phase 2 trials, and it lowers the viral load just like all the other drugs.
Just one more thing. What about funding? Is government funding being cut back because funding is cut back for pretty much everything else? How much are you depending on groups like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation?
Well, the federal funding has been cut back rather drastically over the last 5 years in relation to the economic downturn. And so federal funding is very tight. Now, thankfully, this is when the Gates Foundation has picked up its effort on many fronts, including HIV/AIDS. And for our vaccine effort that I just spoke about, for example, that's completely supported by them.
Just one more thing, Jim. You've been paying for your own medications. Has the cost come down?
The medications, when I started the medications, that's when I started to process claims with my insurance company. Almost 10 years later, is when I applied for disability. And so Medicaid and Medicare takes all of care of that. But I don't really know if they've come down because I also am very lucky. My pharmacy made a deal with me kind of, or they I had approached them about an alternative way to have my prescriptions filled. And the pharmacist came from on top of the pharmacy, platform and said, put his arm around my shoulder and said, we want to keep your business, whatever it takes. And I said, I cannot afford the deductibles. I cannot afford the copays. I live on $11.46 a day because that's what HASA says I should live on after working for 35 years. And I can't do this. And he said, no problem. God bless Grow Pharmacy.
I want to thank you all for being with us and good luck to all of you. We've been talking with Jim Lister and Tyrell, both living with the HIV/AIDS infection, and with Dr. David Ho, who is one of the pioneers in AIDS research. And right now, good luck in coming up with a vaccine.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure talking with all of you, despite the dire situation that we're discussing. Our entire series, AIDS Then and Now, is on our website at WNYC.org. You can also hear the programs from 1987 on the site as well.